Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners and macabre murders and captivating crimes from across the centuries and creating curious cocktails inspired by the Dells at Riddell. And it's episode 159.
It is.
It is. So close to the 60s.
So close to the 60s.
The swinging 60s, if you will. How are you, Nick?
I'm all right.
You all right?
I'm all right.
You a bit tired?
A bit tired.
Long day.
It's been a long week. It's only Wednesday. It's been a long week.
It does feel like a forever week. Yeah. May is dragging. This is when we're actually recording this, by the way.
But in fact, the last day of May, so not going to drag for much longer.
No, but it's felt long. It isn't?
No.
Oh, okay.
It has felt lengthy.
But whenever you're listening to this, it's not now. I'm going to confess then. Right now, I took a antihistamine before recording this because my hay fever has been through the roof and it's starting to kick in, Nick. Starting to kick in. And
well, it's gonna be fun.
I only took a half, literally. I'd have to take a half of an Actifed. Isn't that what they put in meth?
And other things as well, I imagine.
Yeah. Is there?
Yeah.
That's how my brain goes.
From my Breaking Bad knowledge.
Oh, okay. Like Sudafed and Actifed, I know they're used, but there's more drugs
and other chemicals, I feel.
I just went immediately to, oh, right, okay, I'm on meth.
Yes, exactly what it is. Yes.
It is meth they make, isn't it?
In Breaking Bad, yes.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Yes, yeah. It is.
Okay. Well, this is going to be a fun episode.
It's going to be a long episode.
Oh, it's fine. I have a Negroni. It's all going to be good. But you're well.
Yeah, apparently, yes.
That's the most important thing. Any poisonings this week? Meth-related or not?
Meth-related poisonings. I don't believe so. No.
I've been poisoned by pollen.
Mine hasn't kicked in this year. Mine always comes a bit later.
Okay, why don't you just rub salt into my eyes?
But then when you're fine, I'll be crying.
Oh, that's true.
In a month's time or so, when mine kicks in, you'll be fine.
Shouting for order. So. No, tree pollen, that's what gets me. It's my fault for planting a lovely big lilac tree in my garden that attacks me every year.
That is entirely your fault.
Yes.
No one to blame but yourself.
Okay, I will, at night. Well, speaking of nature trying to kill you and being high as a kite as a result of it, I think it is time for us to thank our delicious Patreon subscribers.
Yes, we should indeed. Thank you so much to Leslie Colopy.
To coffee and a good book.
So yeah, is that just you in disguise? And to Melissa Milner. Thank you very much.
Oh, fabulous names, fabulous people. Thank you, you delicious, sexy Patreon subscribers.
Marvelous.
It has been fun over on Patreon this week. We had a murder mystery, and we also talked about hoaxes.
Oh, we did. Yes, I had to think back then. But yes, we did.
I literally mentioned it 30 seconds ago.
I know.
Ago.
I have a very short attention span, and I don't pay attention to what you say.
I'm out of it. You are tired, and somehow it will balance out. Don't you worry. No, we had the Great Moon Hoax.
The Great Moon Hoax, yes.
Which was embedded in a story of murder that also involved another hoax.
Hoaxes are plenty.
Hoaxes are plenty. I like a hoax.
I'm glad.
And I think we should delve into hoaxes.
Okay.
On the main episode. I think there's some big ones out there.
Okay.
Not so much into mysteries of the unexplained, but more actual hoaxes that resulted in people going, oh no, we need to prosecute you for that.
Okay.
So
we should investigate that. I like that.
If you have suggestions of hoaxes, please send them through to us. But also, if you want to know what the hell we're talking about, hoax related or not, please go and check out our Patreon channel. New episodes every single week and a whole host of extra content, a massive back catalogue that you can enjoy the moment you sign up. It's a lovely place.
Many, many, many episodes.
And you get to see our faces every single month as well with the book club live stream.
Oh, yes, that. I was thinking, do you? But yes, you do.
Yes, you graced us with your presence
I did.
This month.
It was, everyone was very lucky.
With a fabulous hat. We're rattling through this. This is gathering a pace.
Speeding along.
Well, Nick, are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready?
Yeah. Why? Yes. Why not?
Are you ready?
Okay.
Did drink cocktails and talk about poison?
Yes.
Or could drink poison and talk about cocktails.
Definitely don't want to do that.
No, that's a bad idea.
It's not fun.
Should we go with the first one?
Let's go with the first one.
Oh, hooray, hooray, hooray. It is Nick's story this week, but we can't possibly have a story without a cocktail in hand. As you know, dear listeners, every week we choose a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell, and it will flavor a cocktail of the week. So, Nick, your stories are your pick.
Mm.
And this week's secret ingredient is...
stationery.
Oh, stationery.
Stationery.
How very sensible.
Very sensible.
And how lovely as
quite.
Well.
Absolutely.
I do like stationery.
Who doesn't?
Mm.
Monsters, that's who.
Only thing that was good about going back to school.
Absolutely, yeah. It's going to buy the new pencil case all the new pens and the notebooks and the pads and all that sort of stuff. That was the exciting bit. Going lovely. To Woolworths and buying all you could.
Oh my God. And paper chase. And that's no more anymore as well. Nice letter writing set.
Sad.
Oh, but stationery. All the stationery involved in that.
Absolutely.
Well, you've got a lot to choose from.
Yes.
Envelopes.
Paper. Staplers.
Rubbers.
Paper clips.
Post-its.
Post-it notes.
Lovely. With that inspirational menu laid out in front of you, what have you come up with?
Well, none of those things.
Okay. Good.
And the more I think about it, the more I think, oh, you're going to shout at me. But I also did notice that someone else has put the exact one on Facebook. So it's not just me.
Okay.
Who has made this connection.
All right.
Someone else has.
That is very good to bring up because that strengthens your case.
Exactly.
Instantly.
Strengthens my argument as to why this is a good connection.
You have witnesses.
I have witnesses.
Right.
We're having a paper plane.
What the hell? What?
It's made out of paper.
It's a very different direction, though.
Why? You can go to stationers and buy some nice, colourful paper.
It's
and
a
make
journey.
A paper aeroplane.
But that's a journey you've gone on. That's a
what's
take
wrong
the
with
paper.
What's wrong with
and
a journey?
A paper plane. I mean, aviation. Okay, fine. I can't do anything well, about it.
You really can't, apart from moan, apparently.
Oh, that is tenuous. And whoever agreed with you on Facebook.
Yes, someone did. Ha. Ah.
You need to take a good long look in the mirror at yourself. Wonder why you did this. But, okay, a paper plane. Well, that's exciting. That's interesting, probably. Well, I think it is time to hurl ourselves into the poisonous cabinet kitchen and shake up a storm. So we'll see you in a minute.
We'll see you in a bit.
And we're back.
Hello.
Well, Nick, we have a paper plane.
We have a paper plane. We also had a very amusing debacle about actually making a paper plane. Which was hilarious and disturbingly terrifying to watch.
I was in charge of paper plane making.
Yeah.
Many lives were lost.
It was like watching a breakdown in progress. An origami breakdown. It was beautiful and upsetting.
And I do know how to make a paper plane. I recently, we were at quiz night and I used to weirdly run a paper plane competition on a newspaper that I worked at. And I said, this is the secret. Today, lost all knowledge of that. And I've just been having a crisis trying to fashion something and throwing it.
It was not good.
You didn't see the earlier prototype where I made one and it went backwards when I actually threw it. Just like, oh, well, okay. So, but you got something for the photo.
Yeah.
So anyway, but the cocktail. No, yeah,
but the cocktail, we have a cocktail.
Well, the cocktail is particularly brown this week.
It's very brown.
And it has a foamy head.
It do.
Is it just Guinness?
Yes, it's a wee tiny glass of Guinness.
Yes, I would say that, no,
no
you don't
it's
like
not.
That.
No, it's not that.
Okay, well, it looks interesting. It's quite full. Yeah, this is thick and browny.
It's brown. It's definitely brown. Well, after last week's sort of non-browniness.
Yeah.
Which is all right, but it wasn't inspiring. And also, it has got a lot colder since then. So we're back into winter, so we need a brown drink.
Well, exactly. It's supposed to be a heat wave this week.
Nonsense. Lies.
My nephew is staying with me. I said, bring your swimming trunks. We're going to get down to the beach. I think now I should have said, bring a polar bear suit. Polar bear suit?
We're going to go to the zoo. Or the Antarctic.
I don't know. Bring something warmer, I should have said.
This is what meth does, people. This is what meth does. So
meant like furry, snuggly outfit. Stand by it.
Good.
But anyway, with a brownie thickness, I have no idea what's in this. So I think we should just dive in. It is a mystery. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Oh, okay. Ow, whoa. Lemon. Lemon is there.
Ooh.
Oh, I like that.
It's good.
Ooh. it's working well with the antihistamine.
I'm glad.
My nose has been slightly blocked all day, so I will reserve judgment that my taste buds may be compromised a tiny bit, but that's really good. Lemony, and it's got some nice flavour behind it. Second sip.
Oh no, victory, like that.
The brown never steers us wrong, does it?
It doesn't, that's very true, it really doesn't.
Oh, that's nice, and it's got a sweetness, nice. A fruitiness, a fruity I might twang. Venture. Oh yeah, I'm all over that.
Go on, give me some ideas.
Okay, hats for pigs. Oh, sorry about the drink.
Yeah, that was what I was going with.
Okay,
yeah.
Right. Lemon.
Well done.
Yeah. Lemon.
Also hinted at by, I said, Sinead, can you bring some lemons on the way down?
I don't know. You might be entertaining later. Is there a whiskey bourbon type?
There is a whiskey bourbon type.
Is it the bourbon?
It is the bourbon.
Yay! Okay, bourbon. Maraschino?
Nope.
Something fruity? Nope. Triple sec? No, oh, nothing fruity.
Lemon is as fruity as you're going to get.
Oh, all right. I'll shut up. Bourbon, some kind of Amaro?
Oh, good shout.
Yeah.
Look at you and your fancy ways. Spying in the kitchen.
No, I have time to spy in the kitchen? No, I was trying to make 50 paper planes for no reason.
No, Amaro, yeah, good shout. Okay.
Amaro, so what kind of Amaro? Oh, God, now you're testing me, so probably I can't guess.
Yeah. No, that will be a very tricky one. And one more thing in there.
Sugar?
Nope.
Bitters?
Nope. An actual thing.
Oh, an actual cherry brandy.
Nope.
Banana liqueur, because that sneaks in every now and then.
That goes in everywhere.
Please don't say there's chartreuse in it.
There's no chartreuse.
Oh, thank God. I will make one more guess and then move on.
Okay.
Sherry.
not quite. Aperol.
Oh, nice.
Aperol.
It's not a million miles away. No, it is.
I think originally it was made with Campari, and that was found to be a bit too bitter. So Aperol, which is a slightly more, less spiky. Yeah, so Aperol. And it's great. It's just equal parts of each.
And what's the Amaro?
The Amaro is, well, the recipe calls for an Amaro Nonino.
Nonino,
which I don't have. Yeah. And I looked and it was about 35 quid for a bottle.
Oh.
But I did have an Amaro Urbano in the cupboard.
That is all just words to all of us. We're like,
I mean, they're much of a muchness. They're the same sort of family of drinks, very sort of herby botanical things. Like you have a mousse or an Amaro. But all of them have varying different botanicals and what have you in them, which give them all different, give slightly different flavors. So the original recipe this calls from the Nonino, so substitute of something else. It is perfectly lovely. I'm sure it's even more lovely with the exact Amaro in, but it's still damn good.
Oh, that is nice.
Yeah,
it would be nice. I say this, but it would be nice if we had the luxury of going to somewhere that had all the Amaros, like a bar that was well stocked with it. We could do a bit of a tasting because, yeah, as you said, it probably doesn't make a huge amount of difference to the mass populace. I would not be able to tell, but yeah, with a different flavors.
I think you probably would. Like you can tell the difference between a Hendrix and a Bombay Sapphire or. On like gins or things, you can. There's
it's fair.
So you can take and taste the difference between different whiskies and different bourbons. You can taste the difference. So I think the Amaros are much the same in that regard. That yes, they are all of a family, but there are, I think, some of them can be very. Some of them are very, very, very similar, but some of them can be quite different.
Oh, nice. I like it.
Well, this one works well.
This is...
Yeah, to be honest, it's one I have wanted to try for a while. It's one I've read about before.
And as soon as you got stationery...
It's like paper. Oh, fuck it. I was going in there.
Crowbarred it in. He said it. He said it on air, everyone. He said it. That is lovely. And that has cleared up my sinuses nicely.
Excellent.
It's made my jaw work over time as well, because that's nice. Last week, it was a week before, I think it was, when we had so much lemon and then nothing. Made our eyes water. This is perfect, because this follows it up with, and now flavour.
And now some things.
Wow, a new cocktail featuring flavour. Lovely.
Well, who would have thought it?
We have our delicious paper planes firmly in hand. We're not going to throw these.
Oh, no, no, no.
We're going to throw them down our gullets. And we're going to saunter down the street. Is it time for a story, Nick?
It certainly is.
Yay!
Rah, hurrah, hurrah.
Hooray, hooray, hooray.
So today, we're going a bit back to our roots today with a good old-fashioned murder in nice old Victorian London.
Yay!
You can almost smell the fog, really, can't you?
Okay, I'd rather we didn't. It didn't smell nice.
So we are off to meet Sarah Squires and her daughter Christiana at the stationers they run at 46 Hyde Road in Hoxton.
Is that it?
Well, they run a stationer's shop.
Right.
That seems like a fairly key point to the story.
It's nice and upfront. We've got within 6 seconds.
I will say the word stationers throughout the episode.
Okay, so, fine. You've made it a feature.
I've made sure it is frequently referred to.
And as they chanced upon the stationers, just say crime scene.
The stationer's shop, yes. 46 Hyde Road in Hoxton, in the East End. East End of London. Now, we meet them in 1872. 2. Sarah is in her early 70s. At this point, her and her daughter, Christiana, late 30s. We don't have exact ages, but sort of late 30s, the reports say. Now, the pair, they have a moderately sort of comfortable life. I mean, as comfortable as you can get in the East End of London slums, really.
Yes.
But she
yes.
owns a business. She has a stationer. She has a shop.
She doesn't want for pens.
Indeed, she does not want for pens or envelopes. Now, Sarah had been married twice in her life. Her first husband, William Pritchard, had been a tobacconist.
Pritchard.
Mr. Pritchard. And the pair had a son, Francis, and two daughters, Sarah and Jemima. William Pritchard, he had passed away. Nothing untoward there. But Sarah had gone on to remarry, this time to John Squires, stationer and print seller.
Print seller?
Print seller.
So that's...
I think that is sort of pictures.
Doing
yes,
pictures?
Yes, as I understand it.
He wasn't selling the printing press there in a shop.
No, I think he was making prints and such like. Nice. So John and Sarah went on to have two children of their own, Christiana and Edwin. Now, unfortunately, this marriage only lasts a few years until John Squires passes away. Again, nothing untoward. It's thought that he actually contracted cholera during one of the many sort of epidemics that sort of flew through London.
I mean, we've heard that excuse before.
Regular intervals.
Cholera! Cholera, of course it was.
So no, there was no suggestion that anything untoward was going on.
I may beg to differ later.
Okay. Sarah was left to run the stationers by herself. She quickly rebranded. A new sign went up above the door. S. Squires. It's now in her name.
Okay, no.
Wholesale stationer, print seller, the trade supplied.
Okay.
It's her business now, and she's keen for everyone to know that, yep, she's in charge. Esquire Stationers.
Trips off the tongue. Mm-hmm. Yes, really? Trade supplied. That's not very exciting. You've built it up quite well there.
Well,
but, you know.
I think it was for her.
Well, she's wholesaling.
She's a woman in business.
Yeah.
And she owns this place to herself. Now, so to begin with, she is assisted in the shop by her children. The daughter, Sarah, she had died at quite a young age, around 5. Again, it's thought through one of the many, many cholera epidemics going on.
You're doing a hand gesture.
I do a hand gesture.
When a child has died, puts his hand down and sort of ushers it away.
Go, be gone, dead child.
Like a dog you're trying to get out of the river. This one's dead.
I've summoned the goose to be gone with you.
So she did.
She did.
She did.
Sarah did.
She haunts the place with a little music box.
Yes,
okay.
That she does. And as the other children, so we're now left with Jemima, Edward, Francis and Christiana.
Lovely.
As they get older, slowly, one by one, they start to leave home as well and set up their own lives until Christiana is left running the shop with her mother. Now, who knows how she really felt about that? She's probably, I would imagine, rather annoyed. She's the last one to leave. Her mother's now getting on a bit.
Yeah.
Can she really just go, right, I'm off now, bye?
It's the lot of the younger child, isn't it? Everyone else can marry off, but she's got to stay and look after invalid mother.
Yeah, so she's stuck in the shop with aging mother.
Surrounded by protractors.
So many envelopes. Now, mother and daughter, they continue to run the shop quite successfully for several years.
It might be a nice relationship
they
have.
Absolutely. I'm sure it was entirely delightful. They live in rooms above the shop. And by all accounts, they are fiercely independent women. Somewhat solitary. They don't have many friends or anything like that. But they refuse to take on staff in the shop. They won't have anyone come in to help them. They won't have any domestic servants, staff, which they could probably afford to have a maid or such like. But no, we will do it all ourselves.
Fair enough, you know, saving pennies.
Saving penny, absolutely. So they think they can manage perfectly fine, thank you. We don't need anyone else to come mess around in our business.
Fair play.
So they live simply. The outward impression is of people without much of anything, but business is good. The shop is always busy, people coming and going. Neighbourhood gossip suggests that the two, they must be hoarding all their money, all the wealth that they must have made. It's hidden in the house somewhere. This is this house. The floorboards are crammed with gold.
Do they think the two of them are dragons?
They're very possibly.
Lying on their wealth every night.
Absolutely. The mattresses are 10 foot in the air, just money underneath them.
Yes, probably they are, because some banks you would give, and then everyone in the Victorian era was like, I'm going to squirrel my money away under floorboards.
Absolutely. But people think it's more than your average house is going
because
to have
they live so
because
simply.
They live so frugally and they don't have staff to pay, they don't have help to pay, they don't have fancy clothes or go away and stuff like that. So all the money they have is just squirreled away. So there must be a lot of cash in there somewhere.
Yeah, they should be spending that.
Because they're not spending it on anything, so it must be around. So now we jump to Wednesday the 10th of July, 1872. The day has started like any other. Sarah has opened the shop early, and both her and Christiana are seen going about their business throughout the morning. Mm-hmm. What are you giggling about?
I laughed because the way you said, like, the day started by any other, and I was convinced you were going to say, the sun rose.
The sun rose. The cocks did cry. They performed their ablutions.
They walked down.
They got out of bed. Went down the stairs. They had some. They had kippers for breakfast, I hear. Around 1 o'clock, a young boy by the name of Archibald Tower.
Magnificent name.
Archibald Tower. He arrives at the stationer's, having been sent to buy a pack of envelopes. Uh-huh. He goes into the store and waits, but no one comes. No one is there to serve him. And he's at the counter, and he's expecting someone to come from the back and sell him his envelope. Nothing.
Because they've opened out. Up. Yeah.
This is one in the afternoon. People have been in and out in the morning. He calls out. No one's there. He thinks, they've run out on an errand somewhere and forgotten to lock the door or something. So he leaves and he goes a wander and says, I'll come back in about an hour. And hopefully they'll be back and all shall be well. Mm-hmm. Not long after, another lad, William Eyre, he enters the shop on an errand from his mother. William simply finds the shop empty, but as he leans on the counter and calls out for someone, he feels his arms get wet and his white sleeves turn red.
No.
Now, thoroughly freaked out by his blood-stained sleeves, young William doesn't stick around to investigate what's going on. And he runs screaming from the shop.
As one would.
His arms are now dripping in blood. And he goes directly across the street to there's a greengrocer's. And their grocer, Edward Dodds, he tries to calm down the terrified young lad, while William tries to explain that something awful has happened next door. Mm. Look at my lovely white shirt. Yes.
My shirt needs laundry immediately.
It's all gone horribly wrong. Now, Edward and his wife Harriet, they venture back across the street to the stationers, calling out for Sarah and Christiana. They see the blood-soaked shop counter, spatters of blood across stacks of papers and things. As they go behind the counter, they find the elderly Sarah Squires crumpled on the floor, blood flowing from wounds in her head. Harriet leaves to track down the local constable, while Edward ventures further inside the house. In the short passage that linked the front of the shop to the back parlour, there he finds Christiana's body. She too was lying on the ground with blood oozing from gaping wounds in the back of her head. Oh. It looked like she had been trying to run from the front room. She'd been running down this passage. The attacker had caught up with her, struck her from behind. She had gone down. Now, soon, Constable James Kingley was on the scene.
Marvellous. Constable Kingley.
Constable Kingley was
You're
there.
Going to trust him. Absolutely. Should I be asking right now why Archibald, who came in earlier, did not notice any blood?
Well, it seems like William only noticed it because he sort of leant on the counter. So he got it on his sleeves. I mean, it's not like the whole room was dripping in blood. It was on the counter. And if you looked at the counter, some of the papers and stuff like that.
So you were looking behind it.
I mean, no one ventured behind the counter. You wouldn't go into a shop and venture behind the counter just to...
So Archibald just came in, looked around, rang the bell.
Called out, no one's here, I'm off. He didn't pay much.
Took his hand away going, they've been on the Bloody Marys and then going out
wasn't blood dripping from the ceilings and things like that. William with his hand on his... He discovered that.
Constable Kingsley
is here now. Now, whispers by this, there's whispers all up and down the street now. Murder, 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 murder.
They're not whispers, there's yelling.
He's yelling of murder. Now, his job quickly turns into keeping the gathering crowd out of the house. Now, everyone is now rushing to the house to see what's going on. Ooh, I want to see some dead people.
Oh, yeah.
I want to get there and have a look. The constable is there going, no. Fuck off. So that is his role now. A doctor is sent for. Dr. Hawthorne, who has a practice on nearby Hoxton Street. He is summoned. He confirms that, yes, both women are dead. They had likely been dead for at least a minimum of an hour, maybe two. As he examines Sarah, he notes her face has been practically obliterated. The violence. Her skull shattered, one of her ears almost severed. He estimates 7 heavy blows to her head. Christiana had suffered much the same fate, 5 blows, he thinks, to her head from a blunt instrument. The doctor goes on to point out that one or two would have been more than enough to kill these women. There was a massive overkill. Obviously, the attacker had continued his assault long after these women had expired. The doctor thinks something. It was something like a hammer or an iron bar had been used. Something with serious weight behind it. No such weapon or item was found in the house, so it was assumed that the killer had taken it with him.
So clearly was attacking to kill completely. It,
absolutely.
Not to stun and grab what you need and go.
Yeah, this was absolutely, yeah. Now, Inspector Ramsey of N Division.
Good names in this, well done.
Arrives to take charge of the crime scene and start the investigation. The till had been forced open and emptied. The drawers behind the counter had been pried open, their contents scattered around the floor and gone through. In Sarah and Christiana's living area, behind and above the shop, all the cupboards and drawers had been opened and searched. In the bedrooms, clothing had been flung around the place as if someone had been searching, really going through the place with a fine-tooth comb, trying to find these supposed riches that held in the house. On a sideboard in the parlour, a large clock had been knocked down and the hands had stopped at just gone noon.
Had they?
Yes, they had.
It was very poetic.
It's very poetic.
Yeah.
That's what the reports are saying. Police immediately suspect robbery is the motive. As I said, there have long been these rumours that the women had hidden their wealth in the house. The place had been thoroughly searched. But then if this was just a simple robbery, as you say, why the ferocity of the attack? Why was that necessary?
Well, it makes you feel like, did the victims know their attacker? So that necessitated them being killed. There's no way of knocking them out and then going, oh, a masked assailant or something.
You can kill without going to the level that was gone to. A couple of blows would have done the trick. These women would not get up again. But to completely almost obliterate someone, smash someone's skull to pieces,
you're absolutely sure it's a very weird thing, but people can recover from horrific attacks and someone's gone, well, there's no more skull left, so I don't think they'll be able to piece that together.
The police also think, well, this was a very personal attack on someone. This is not simple theft. This is a very
angry,
rage-filled but personal attack. So it's not just a chance robbery. There are other motives at play here.
Taking the time to strike those extra blows.
As the inspector starts to speak to people in the area, he begins to build up a bit of a picture of an odd family. Really, the Squires.
Okay.
They're a bit bizarre. From what he can tell, Sarah and Christiana, they are virtual hermits. They never leave the house, really. Only when they absolutely have to. They have very strained relationships with the rest of the family. All the other, Sarah's other children, Christiana's siblings, very difficult. They discover that years before there had been a fierce, row between Sarah and her son Francis, Christiana's half-brother. Francis had been drinking, as apparently he was wont to do quite frequently, and the pair had argued over an inheritance from his father, the tobacconist, Mr. Yes. Pritchard. All that money had gone to Sarah. Francis thought, no, he was entitled to something. He had been a child when his father had died, but now he has grown up. He thinks, no, I am deserving of some money from my father.
Where's my cut?
Absolutely. Well, there is no cut. It went into raising you and paying for everything. So there is no money left. So there's nothing. Ooh. Sarah had been forced to kick Francis out, but he was apoplectic, the reports say. Now no one has seen him for a few years, really.
Oh shit.
After he had been kicked out, he had vanished. Apparently no one had seen him around for a long, long time. But police leap on this, thinking, well, this must be it. This might the estranged son has returned.
Estranged,
he's angry.
Yeah.
He wants the money he thinks he's owed. He's gonna get it no matter what.
It's an extreme leap.
But they think, okay, this is as good a clue as anything we've got to go on.
Yeah.
So police track down Francis straight to the Shoreditch workhouse.
Okay.
It turns out that Francis' drinking had got the better of him, and he had spent the last 4 years either in the workhouse or being locked up in Colney Hatch Asylum.
Oh my God.
One or the other. So he had a solid alibi. Yeah, where he was at the time of his mother's and sister's murder.
Lying there going, I was either drunk or mental.
Yeah. So you don't just walk out of the workhouse. Once you signed yourself in, you're in there for a while.
Yes, hence the name.
Yeah, you don't just walk out whenever you fancy.
You have chimneys to scrub and laundry to boil, yeah. Apparently.
So, it's not Francis. It's definitely not Francis.
No.
That's annoying. That's one off the list.
It would fit so perfectly. It's a leap. To murder your own family. Yeah.
But they're now on a bit of a roll. They start looking at the other brother, Edwin.
Oh, the other brother.
The other brother. It must be him. What's him?
Edwin seems like a very evil name.
Edwin was a professional musician.
Evil.
Evil. Evil. And he had been hired to play at an event in Brentwood. In Essex, on the day of the murders. And there are many, many witnesses say he was there. I don't know what instrument he played.
Oh, I was going to ask.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't know. But he was there doing his thing at the time of the murders. No, not Edwin. Oh, shit.
playing the piano or the violin.
Whatever it was.
Or was a one-man band. Yes. He was terrible, tunelessly beating out songs at a wedding.
It wasn't Edwin. From the very beginning, the police were at a loss, really. They have so little to go on. So the killer has left nothing at the scene.
But they've just gone for the boys.
They've gone for the boys.
Yeah.
That's it.
Sisters.
There are sisters. Well, there's only one other sister.
Yeah.
Sarah died young.
Little one,
Christiana, dead, and we have Jemima. We will come on to Jemima in a bit later.
Nice, yes. I love the name Jemima, by the way.
The killer has left nothing at the scene. They have come and gone in broad daylight. This is not the middle of the night.
Yeah.
This is midday.
Strutted in.
In the middle of a high street.
Yeah.
In an open shop where anyone could have walked in. And no one has noticed anything. No one, what's this? It's weird.
Yeah. Like, there must have, the person didn't seem out of the ordinary.
Yeah.
Walking in there.
Now, of course, the press are quick to jump on to the case and more than happy to point out all the failings of the police. That the police have been entirely useless. They can't find anything. What's going on here?
Is that what the headline was?
What's going on here?
What's going on?
The Gentleman's Magazine.
Sorry, whoa. The Gentleman's Magazine.
The Gentleman's Magazine.
Which were accompanied by the Gentleman's Relish, a small pot of fish paste.
Writes, the well-known stationer's store stands out now like a rebuke to the rest. The name of the dead stares at you from the doorway as if the letters were traced in blood.
Oh, God's
The blinds
sake.
Are closed against the daylight. The dumb windows seem still to shut in the scene of blood. The whole house pleads to the passerby for vengeance. I'm liking the Gentleman's Magazine.
Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Why aren't there more articles like that? I mean, because you may as well. It's not saying shit all. It's saying there's a house and we'd like to know answers.
It's a vengeful house.
It's a vengeful house. That does seem like the start of a horror film sort of synopsis.
Great. Well, I read that. Oh, I love that.
Absolutely include that. Yep, the vengeful house.
Now, the Lloyd's Weekly newspaper reports into the inquest. Into the deaths of Sarah and Christiana Squires, giving all the gory details became known as the Hoxton Horror.
I like alliteration.
I like a bit of alliteration, absolutely.
The Hoxton Horror.
The Hoxton Horror. Now, the first witness called was Caroline Richards. She lived on an adjacent street, and her house backed onto the shop's yard. She says that around noon on the day of the attack, she had been doing laundry and she had heard faint cries of murder. She didn't really take any notice.
Didn't really take any notice. It's London.
Well, she said there were another couple who lived nearby who were in the habit of quarrelling through intoxication.
Okay.
And she had often heard similar such cries.
Oh,
so
ooh, that's
just
unsettling.
Ignored them. So yeah, she was used to drunk people crying murder in the middle of the street.
See, that's touched a nerve because I love it when we get Victorian stories of any era, quite frankly, where people say, I heard screams in the night, did nothing. Absolutely did nothing. And I've only just remembered this now that I know there was a murder months later. But there's also that point of if you hear something crazy going on, back in the Victorian era, you'd be like, oh, well, it's just a couple battering the shit out of each other.
Do you know the story of Kitty Genovese?
Oh, tell.
This might be a Patreon one, actually. It's a textbook case for psychology students. I learnt about it doing psychology A-level. It was a murder in New York.
Okay.
I think in the late 70s, early 80s or something like that. A woman murdered just in an alleyway surrounded by tenement blocks and high-rise buildings and stuff like that. Screaming, screaming, screaming. Afterwards, nearly everyone said, yes, I heard that. Everyone else thought, someone else will deal with it. Someone else will call the police. Someone else will go and investigate. Why is it my responsibility to get involved in that way? Yeah. No one did anything.
Yeah.
Until she was found later dead in the street. Then everyone was like, oh, shit.
It's a very...
But yeah, it's a big thing about sort of collective responsibility, yeah, and all that sort of happens.
But that feeling of, you know, oh, people are... Because, you know, you hear people fighting in the street.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do the same. And I go... I'm not, someone else will deal with it.
We recorded sitting here, heard people screaming outside. Like, should I have called the police? What do you do? What do you do? Back in the Victorian London, people are being murdered a lot. And people are being battered and no one is going to come for that. Yeah. This wife is being beaten to death, so she didn't go out and married. So a problem.
Yeah, what does she do to annoy her husband?
Oh, God.
Caroline Richards, continues giving testimony. She goes on to say that on the Saturday prior to the murder was on a Wednesday, so the Saturday prior, she had heard glass breaking and thought that it had come from one of the windows at the back of the shop. Coroner asked if she knew of any other attempts to break into the shop, to which she replied, Mrs. Squire told me that a fortnight before, a branch of a tree was broken down. She thought it was by a cat.
Big cat.
The coroner went on to say exactly that. It must have been a very fat cat to break the branch.
It's a small lion.
So, next up is Henry Innell. He's a butcher. He has a shop nearby. He reports that he had spoken to Sarah at 11 o'clock on that Wednesday morning. Sarah was alive and well. She had told him about the attempted break-in on the Saturday. Sarah had taken him into the parlour to show him the broken window. Uh-huh. Christiana had sort of like pasted over it with some paper to stop the draft coming through, but you could still clearly see it was broken.
Yeah.
They stood in the shop chatting. When Sarah revealed to the butcher, you know, Mr. Innell, if they were to get in here, they would not get anything. Because when I go into the city, I take my money and I leave it there.
Okay.
So much for fortune hidden under the floorboards. There was nothing in the house.
Is that a shrewd sentence, though, to say to someone, to be... taking your neighbours into the rooms and say people who work locally and go, oh, yeah, let me just show you who tried to break in. By the way, no one would ever get anything from me.
Maybe.
Is she being shrewd?
Is she trying
to start gossip around going, no one's going to get anything?
Yeah. Or maybe very legitimately, she takes her money to the bank.
She could be telling the truth. Yeah, she could be telling the truth to the butcher who's holding a cleaver.
Maybe time for a wee drink.
Oh, I think that's time for a drink.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
So, Nick.
Hello.
The butcher has seen the scene.
The butcher has given his testimony.
He has.
Next up, 17-year-old George Squires takes the stand.
Oh, what?
This is a bit of a weird one.
What?
So we've not encountered George Squires so far, but so he starts his testimony. I believe I am the son of Christiana Squires.
Oh.
I used to live at 46 Hyde Road, but had left about 2 years ago. I visited grandmother about once a fortnight. I last saw her alive about 3 weeks before the murder. George continued to say that he was always told to refer to Christiana as his aunt.
Oh.
But he believed that she was in fact his mother. So it looks like Christiana had gotten herself in the family way
at some point.
And rather than face the scandal of having being an unwed mother, George, the child, was passed off as the son of one of her siblings. Someone who couldn't take care of him properly. So the grandmother was looking after him.
Yeah.
On their behalf, Christiana was an aunt.
Okay. Oh, yes, common thing. Isn't it?
Absolutely. Yes. But George is entirely convinced that Christiana is actually, she's my mum.
Well, it's a tale as old as time, isn't it? The aunt you suddenly find out is your mother. Shame. God, so many questions now. So did she give birth there, and the mother's been in on it, and he's been living there? Oh, Jemima.
Although the mother is absolutely in on it. Yeah, definitely for certain.
But Jemima. Jemima's the only other.
She's
sister.
The owner of the sister.
She's
got two. Well, you've got two brothers who could have had a child as well.
Oh, okay, fine.
But yes, Jemima is the only other female sibling. Now, we will come to Jemima absolutely.
We're building up Jemima.
We really are. Yeah, and yeah.
Sorry, I'm leaping to conclusions that boys can't have babies.
Boys don't have babies. No. Now, the news that George has revealed leads to all sorts of speculation about who his father is. Who was the father?
Right.
Who was the father? Had the father been involved in the death of Christiana? So, I mean, George now is 17 years old. So one would assume that Christiana had not seen or had not had much to do with the father for the past 17 years or so.
Indeed.
So why he would now come back suddenly and murder her, but I don't know. But now the thinking is, there's a mystery man.
Well, there's a mystery
There's a mystery man involved. He must have been involved.
We could make up all manner of things.
Absolutely. George also reveals that his mother / aunt had a couple of men courting her that he knew about. I mean, unsurprisingly, really, she was a single woman due to inherit a thriving business from a very elderly mother. Assumed she was going to have a bit of money behind her.
Yeah.
So need to get in on that.
and she would enjoy a gentleman's company.
Absolutely.
Yes, she was entitled to have gentlemen callers.
Quite right. Two men were identified as a sailor known called York.
Two men? What?
There are two men.
Right, so it was two men were identified as a sailor.
No, two men. One of them,
right,
a sailor called York, the other a stonemason by the name of Niblet. Sailor York and stonemason Niblet.
Niblet. Niblet. Niblet. Oh, is the stonemason. That stonemason, powerful.
Well, tools.
Tools.
Hammers.
Tools.
All these sorts of things. So people go, right, these two men.
And sailor.
They have found out that Christiana has more than one
paramour
type thing. So they've been jealous and in a rage, and they have gone to confront Christiana about her cheating. I don't know how serious they were, but about carrying on potentially with two men.
Yeah, if we want to have this narrative, then yes, they've gone along, battered her. But you would think that the mother, the Christiana, would get the brunt of the attack.
Would have been absolutely.
Mother
would
got
have been the
worst
target.
Of it.
Mother got the worst of it. But that is the thinking. So now we've got another two men involved
more men.
Who we can crowbar a motive into. so it's them. It must be them.
It must be them.
And track down York and Niblet, the crime fighting duo. One's a sailor. One's a stonemason. Over land and sea they go.
That is the cozy crime-fighting fantasy that we want to see. Nibble it!
Both the sailor and the stonemason have rock-solid alibis.
Rock solid. The stonemason in particular.
Yeah,
he's just there going, I was tied to this rock the whole time.
But no, they were both at work, many, many witnesses to say, no, they were here stonemasoning and sailoring. They were doing their thing.
They were fighting crime. That's what they were doing.
Could not possibly have run off to murder two women in the middle of the day.
They were crafting fine pamphlets about their adventures.
Now, people are going, well, this is all fascinating. This is all great backstory. But 100%. But it's got us no closer to actually who has murdered these women. We've got no suspect. We haven't even really got a concrete motive.
No.
We have a theory. Could have been money, could have been rage, could have been revenge, but we don't actually know. But then the whole thing is suddenly put on hold. The whole inquest is put on hold.
But Christmas?
Another death. 10 days after the murders. Jemima.
It's bloody Jemima.
The eldest daughter of Sarah and half-sister to Christiana is found dead. Now, sadly, this one turns out to be something less of a mystery.
Okay.
It is quickly ascertained that Jemima has committed suicide. She has slit her own throat.
Oh, good Lord, woman.
No, she's gone for it. Now, the reason why people think Jemima has committed suicide, there appears to be no note or anything explaining her reasoning. So, of course, this gives people license to make up their own theories as to why she has done this. I mean, many think, it's just the awful shock about what has happened. Her mother and her half-sister have been brutally killed.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a terrible, terrible, terrible thing to happen. So the grief from that has driven her to such a desperate act.
Yeah.
But then people say, well, the family's not that close.
No.
They haven't really seen each other for a couple of years, really. So, yes, you would be upset, but
there would be
so
no
grief-stricken.
There should be no link.
So, so they think, possibly not. Others think that Jemima was actually terrified of being called to give evidence or being called to the inquest. She had a failed marriage of her own. Uh-huh. She had married a man, had several children out of wedlock, then married the chap. The marriage did not last.
Yeah.
She was now separate. Her mother had not approved of this match, which is why they were estranged and hadn't spoken for so long. And Jemima was, she was embarrassed. She was absolutely mortified.
Well, she'd have to go up in front of
and
in
to
the
air
court.
All this dirty laundry in court in front and say, this is why I haven't spoken to my mother, because I ran off with a man I loved, a man who left me, may have got me pregnant, and now I'm a single mother with two children and stuff like that. And it would have been humiliating for her.
The way the papers have been reporting on this crime, it's not going to make you feel good.
Absolutely
about
not.
It.
So, there are theories that the only way that she could avoid this humiliation and scandal was to take her own life.
Poor Jemima. I'm sorry, Jemima. I heard you penned as the greatest criminal of all time.
Well, and there are then the third batch that go down that. Was it a guilty conscience? People go, was it a guilty conscience? She had killed her mother, who she hadn't seen for ages, and her half-sister, because the sister was going to get the shop, and she was, Jemima was a charwoman. She had been reduced to cleaning other people's houses and things, but she was entitled to some of this shop. So had she, out of rage, gone to visit her mother and
battered
her mother to death and then along the sister. The police said no. Again, they were able to track Jemima's movements. She had a very clear alibi at the time. So that obviously doesn't really matter to the papers because it's a good story.
Yeah. Oh, she's dead. You can't lie
about it. And she's dead. So yeah. So unfortunately, Jemima's story does not have a particularly happy ending. And that is the last of the siblings, really, that anyone can point a finger at. And they all got the finger pointed at them.
Well, it's quite distressing, the fact that this entire family is practically destroyed.
Completely.
In the press by this. And everyone's going to be pointing the fingers at the living and to the dead as well. Mm. They have no legacy apart from, oh, I bet you it was them.
So after everything with Jemima is dealt with, the inquest kicks off again. And we start with evidence from James Jones, a 17-year-old carman's assistant. So a carman being someone who drove horse-drawn carriages, like wagons, for deliveries.
Right.
He was assistant. He would walk a lot on the road alongside the horses to make sure they were going straight and people were out of the way and all this sort of stuff.
All right, picking up the shit.
Picking up the shit, yeah. All those fun
Actually,
jobs.
Actually, Victorian London, nobody cares.
James reveals that he had been walking beside a wagon going down Hyde Road around the time of the murder when he had seen there was another wagon coming the other way. Now, they had stopped to allow this other wagon to pass, and as it goes past number 46, the stationers, a man has come rushing out of the shop and is knocked down by one of the horses.
Oh, okay.
Now, this man apparently quickly gets to his feet, making a very conscious effort, James thinks, to hide his face. Mm. James describes the chap as a pale man with a dark beard who wore a wide-brimmed hat. This is the first and only description of people they think is the likely murderer. And it's also the description of most men in London. He had a beard.
Dark beard. Hat. Brilliant.
Yeah. Still not a great deal to go on. not much to go on.
Every man who shaved that day is breathing a sigh of relief.
Next, we have Charles Henry Hasler. Now, he's a glazer who has been called to the house.
Also a great name.
Charles Henry Hasler. so he's been called in by Sarah to fix the broken windows that have been smashed. And now Sarah, I'm loving her drama. Sarah tells him it was done with a piece of brick. It was the thieves. And I suspect we shall all be murdered.
Oh, God. Whoa.
This is what Sarah has told Charles. Charles is there to fix a window.
But there's a lot of drama from the girls.
Oh, yeah.
From the ladies.
Absolutely.
In the house, saying to people coming in, the glazer, the butcher and everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, just saying like, oh, we shall all be murdered. Shit has happened.
All be murdered. She goes on to say, the worst of it is, it's our neighbours. I know them very well. It's in that street. And she's pointing towards Gospel Street.
Not Gospel Street.
Gospel Street.
The word of the Lord.
Now, Sarah is on a roll, telling Charles, one ran from my house and one was in the yard, the other side of the wall, and another stood on the wall, making three in all, she says.
Standing
on the wall. The man in the yard threw the piece of brick to the man on the wall, who threw it through the window. We shall all be murdered, sure as I'm alive.
That does sound like a bunch of kids. We should all be murdered.
Now, in between Sarah's revelations, Charles is trying to fix the window.
And he's just like, any chance of a cup of tea.
Any chance of a cup of tea.
Takes the tea. Oh, shit, now I have to listen to you. So right, okay, mate.
He tells Sarah, look, it'll be much easier if I can... I can take this small pane out. I'll take it back to the workshop.
Yeah.
Get a new bit of glass, put it in there. I can be back later this afternoon. Have it fitted. Fine. Oh, no, don't take it away. We should all be murdered, she says.
Seriously?
Yeah.
This many times?
This many times. Well, this is what is reported in the inquest.
Right, he is bullshitting. Sorry. This is getting to the point of, I don't know, I'm on two sides. I can imagine her being a drama queen. And the glazier going, oh, she definitely said she was all being murdered. And she probably said it once and he just overplayed this.
Maybe so.
We should all be murdered. Anything slightly inconveniences you this week at work, at home, with gatherings of people, I want you all to be going, we should all be murdered. That's it. That's your phrase now.
Charles did take the window away. And returned half an hour later with the replaced glass. Fortunately, Sarah was still much alive at the time. She had not been murdered in the interim.
She's armed. She is armed. She's just armed with fountain pens.
But she thought she knew who was trying to break in.
The neighbours, yes.
The neighbours, she pointed in the direction of the street. She thought she knew exactly who it was. So were the murderers? Were they the same thieves who just got bored of waiting and had made their way inside?
If she is to be believed, if she isn't just being someone who is clutching her pearls, also her handkerchief to her throat, going, we should all be murdered, in that voice. If she is frightened, genuinely, it's because she's seen people targeting the house. She is, you can't take the window away. I am afraid for my life.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm going to be killed. Ah, that's a whole new dark twist, isn't it?
Now, unsurprisingly, the inquest returns a verdict of willful murder by persons unknown. Of course it does.
No.
Despite all the statements that they gathered at the inquest, police are still none the wiser. Pale, dark, bearded. That's about it. Questions are asked around Gospel Street. There are no arrests. No one is ever charged or brought to trial for the murders. But then... Dramatic appendices now. On the 29th of August, 1888...
Jack the Ripper.
2 days before Jack the Ripper.
Fuck off.
31st of August was his...
Yeah.
So we're 2 days before the Ripper. Thomas Wright drunkenly wanders into Worship Street Police Station and confesses to the murders of Sarah and Christiana Squires 18 years earlier.
Nice.
It was me. During questioning, he states that he killed both women with a crowbar, then robbed the house before running.
Okay.
Now, this seems to tally with all the facts that the police can gather. So we're 18 years later now.
And if he's giving good facts?
This matches what we think has happened. They think, well, at last, have we got our man? We've got him. We should probably check it out a couple of things, but we've probably got him. when Thomas sobers up, he tries to recant his confession. The police aren't budging. No, you said it. You said it. No, you can't take it back
now.
No, you said it now.
We have to take his first answer.
That is, they find he has a rock solid alibi for the time of the murders. He was at work, surrounded by loads of people. Everyone there going, he wasn't murdering anyone. He was there.
Oh my God, that's
They did arrest Thomas for wasting police time.
Good.
Magistrate Mr. Saunders gave the suitably embarrassed Thomas a piece of his mind,
nice.
Saying, "You seem to have given everyone a great deal of trouble for nothing by charging yourself with murder. It is a very disgraceful thing that a man should stir up all this bother by charging himself with murder and then offer as an excuse that he was in drink. Ought to be sent to prison, and I am sorry that I have not the power to sentence you. I hope one of these days the law will be altered and people who charge themselves with murder will be liable to punishment." Unfortunately, he wasn't, and he got away with a slapped wrist.
A slapped wrist? Oh my God.
There was a small resurgence of interest in the case
after
this supposed confession and released. And another paper wrote, "This terrible crime has been allowed to drop out of public memory with a calm resignation which does not add to one's peace of mind. Are we in these days becoming callously accustomed to foul deeds, or is the business of life so much more engrossing than it used to be? We see criminal after criminal slipping away from justice without some stirring protest." And that was it. The Hoxton Horror, the murders of Sarah and Christiana Squire, went unsolved and forgotten.
And two days later,
Mr. Ripper.
Oh, good story, Nick.
Hoxton Horror.
The Hoxton Horror. Drink to that. That's a good mystery. There's a lot to unpack there.
Ah.
I love that epitaph, if you can call it. With a man, again, on... never ceases to amaze the people who will wander into a police station going, I did it. What goes through your mind?
Why would you confess to such a thing?
Well, whatever darkness you carry and you decide, I want to go to jail for life for killing these people. When you have an airtight alibi, that's crazy. Or had some hand in it. But having that newspaper report, I don't know if the dates lined up or anything like that, saying like, oh, well, are these just the days we live in of mindless violence?
But yeah, and then absolutely.
Suddenly, you know what's coming? Oh, you ain't seen nothing yet, boys.
So,
but yeah, what happened to the
ladies? Absolutely.
What happened to them? Do we believe George and Christiana that she had had a child out of wedlock and he was telling the truth?
It seemed to be a fairly open secret sort of thing. So I think, so this is not the first time that such things had been suggested. I mean, he had lived there for several years, most of his life until 2 years prior. So he seemed to, from when he was born to about the age of 15, he had lived at the shop.
Always calling her an aunt.
Calling no Sarah grandmother.
His mother or father was, and then suddenly it's like, she's definitely her mother.
Yeah. So whether the family resemblance was that striking that people commented
like,
or something.
It totally is.
Yeah.
Is there any justification for their murder? Any reason for their murder? You know, him just giving the evidence. It's interesting.
Well, it's interesting that there's nothing in the reports that I could find that actually, I mean, what happened to the shop? Did George inherit the shop, or where? Because all the other siblings are now, well, Edwin's, he's a musician, so, and Francis is in between the workhouse and the asylum, so there was money. Now, whether she said it was in the bank Was it in the bank? We don't know. Was that, as you suggested, a bluff? And it was in the house and had all been robbed? We don't know. I don't know what became of the business, if that went to one of the brothers or to the grandson.
So I'm going to go with
it's odd.
I'm going to go with a theory that miserly grandmother, she's going to keep everything close to her chest. Yeah. Youngest daughter, you must stay here and look after me and my dotage. I have no choice in this whatsoever. Mm. I'm going to go with they were setting that up. Whatever attack was made on the shop, and I believe that, that someone smashed the window, whatever. Yep. The butcher was brought in. The glazer was brought in and they are standing there going, oh, well, we've been attacked. And yes, there's no point because I've taken all my money into the City of London and it's not here. It's definitely not here. They know that gossip is spreading around the street.
Interesting.
If someone is targeting their property, you're not going to just put a sign out the front going, no cash kept here overnight, like you do on so many places now. You're going to like spread the gossip. You're going to gently have it. So everyone's whispering going, oh, no, they don't. They use a bank in the city. Because who's going to do it? The neighbours, anyone in their neighbourhood.
It's going to hear that. Yeah.
It's going to be whispering, oh, they've got a lot of cash in there. They've got a lot of cash in there. Mm. So, yeah, they're trying to go like, oh, no, we definitely not have cash.
Yeah,
she could go out onto her steps and shout it. Go, no cash is here. It seems like they're going out of their way.
It was an unsuccessful ploy.
Yeah, didn't work.
Because they all ended up dead.
And what rumours were spread how much money they had in that building?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it must have been a decent, because she's been married to two, a tobacconist and then the stationer, two successful shopkeepers.
Well, that's all it takes. And she has two together.
She has run the business herself for many, many years. Yeah, so there's money there. They are not poor.
But that's the.
But where is it?
Oh, but that's the thing. This is the stuff that great novels are written of. Everyone thinks they're being reclusive because they're miserly. They're counting their money. They're hiding it. The actual reality is they were reclusive because Christiana had a baby. That was it. Mm. And that they were being private. They were so reclusive because she had a secret shame of the time. But everyone else thought that she had loads of money in the place. And that's why they attacked her. And that's why they broke in. Solved it.
Sorted.
I mean, I don't know who did it.
Someone.
That's it. Write the story,
but that's
people.
The motive.
I don't know who did it, though. So you said the brutality of the attack, though.
I mean, it certainly suggests a very personal sort of rage-fueled attack. But there doesn't seem to be anyone, say, family members ruled out. And they didn't have, by all accounts, friends. Really, or people, yeah, they had the people they knew around the area, but they didn't have close confidants or friends like that. So who would be so angry at them to do that? Or was it just someone, you do something and...
You make sure they're dead.
Or you do just lose it in the moment type of thing.
At the moment, yeah. We covered many a case before where we've talked about random attacks.
You strike... trying to knock someone out or trying to kill them. And then, as you say, you want to make sure, so you just keep on going.
A fascination takes over, like, okay, let's see what happens here. Like, oh, God, it's
but
horrible.
It was certainly effective.
If you were going down the family route, I mean, they all have alibis, though, don't they?
They all have alibis, absolutely. They all have solid alibis.
Unless we believe that... was it Francis who was in the workhouse?
Francis was in the workhouse. Yep, he was
there.
You
know, I mean, we could go down the Dr. Thomas Cream route here, that despite the fact that you are in jail in America, you can still be Jack the Ripper in London because you've bribed someone to let you out. So Francis, same thing. Yep, definitely that could have happened.
There was talk potentially about Jemima's estranged husband because he's still knocking around the place.
Yeah.
So was he? I think I don't know how thoroughly they investigated him, but he was a name that came up. Because he certainly wasn't popular in the household with the family. He was not a popular chap. So was he somehow involved? But they didn't seem to look into him with any great detail or anything. But it was another sort of family member.
And poor Jemima as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I was all ready to paint her as she was the perpetrator. And no. We could go down that route and say she came in and she hated her mother and her sister who were going to inherit, that they had all the benefits. They had some sort of close relationship that she was cut out of, and a frenzied attack. It does just seem like...
Unfortunately, I just think it's just a very, very, very sad and depressed woman.
Who could have had nothing, who killed herself for reasons not associated with their lives whatsoever. But also, I'm about to go to court and be dragged through the press.
Yeah, Absolutely.
Dragged through the press.
Every bit of my failed life is going to be put out for public ridicule.
For the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And my children's life. That's horrible. That really is a downer. Oh, I felt bad for Jemima now. I wanted a female villain at the end of this. I don't know why.
But could well be.
A great story, Nick. Well, what do you think, people? We have presented many, many options. Tell us your thoughts. Tell us your theories. Tell us any people that we maybe haven't considered. Make some shit up, because apparently that's what the newspapers did. But the family dynamic there, was it the neighbours? Were the women trying to deflect attention away from some sort of attack that had been mentioned to them? Oh, it's so juicy. We're going to write the Netflix series, obviously. But most importantly, while you ponder, while you think of all of this, you must mix yourself up a paper plane.
A paper plane. It's quite delightful.
Oh, that was a delight.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's going in the book.
Yeah, that was good. And I don't feel too drunk.
Excellent.
Yeah.
It's all that meth.
To be honest, it cut through the Actifed. It cut through the antihistamine. I feel alert as anything now and a little bit buzzed. It's
marvellous.
Great. This is what I want.
So that's what you need. Yeah, paper plane and antihistamine. You'll be having a grand time. The recipe will be out on Friday.
Please tag us in any photos of you enjoying your cocktails around the world. We love to see them. We love to hear from you as well. If you have just discovered this podcast or whether you've been a listener for a long time, it doesn't matter. We would love to see your pictures. We'd love to hear from you about where you are while listening, and send us a picture randomly of where you listen to us as well. Particularly enjoyed, we had a great post on the Belladonna Book Club of a beautiful listener who is doing stained glass window art. Nice. Set their station up and their cat just sat on all their stuff.
Excellent.
Yeah. If you haven't already, please come and join us over on Patreon for extra episodes every single week, as well as a lot of bonus content. Leave us a review on Apple iTunes, because it really helps the podcast. And come and find us on TikTok if you're on there, because we do like to have fun there.
Oh, indeed.
Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the poisoner's cabinet. We will see you next week. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Boy.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.